I come here to speak with you about the practice of self-inquiry as introduced to the world by Sri Ramana Maharshi. This is the way it usually goes. The way it usually goes is that I talk for a while about whatever comes to mind to speak about, and then I answer your questions or talk to you about whatever you want to talk about. I can tell you that in advance that I can be of help to you. I really can. The reason that I can be of help to you is not because I am a guru or a god or anything like that, but because I have the direct personal experience of having listened to Ramana and done what he said and seen the outcome of it. And that's the basis that gives me the ability to be of help to you. But I can't help you by preaching to you. I mean, I enjoy preaching to you. I really kind of like the sound of my own voice, and I enjoy talking to you about things. But I can't help you by preaching to you. I can be of help to you only if you engage me and ask me questions and challenge me, disagree with me, agree with me, whatever. Engage me. Doesn't mean that every single one of you has to, because it's my experience that we all have the same, pretty much the same problems, pretty much the same confusions. We are in this together and always have been, for better or worse. But you have to engage me in order for me to really be of help to you. I want to begin, as I always do these days, by trying to tell you as succinctly and simply as possible what is the insight of Ramana Maharshi that I receive from him. And, well, just that. Tell you as simply and succinctly as possible. Ramana's fundamental insight is that the only problem in all of humanity, the only problem, I'm not talking about problem in the sense of the problems that we face when we have to get the rent paid or find our way to the grocery store or figure out what we're going to eat for dinner or any of those things, any of the problems of daily life, but the fundamental existential problem, the problem that keeps us forever craving for happiness, the problem that keeps us forever convinced that there's something I'm missing, something I haven't yet got, something that's not right and should be right. The only problem, the source of that existential anxiety and dissatisfaction is a false belief about what we are. There is no other problem. There's nothing in your mind that needs to be fixed. There's nothing in the way that this life unfolds that needs to be changed or kept from changing. There's nothing about your desires or your brilliance or your stupidity that needs to have anything done about it. The only problem whatsoever, the problem that is the source of all the unhappiness there is, and because of that, the source of all of the aggression, the hatred, the betrayal, the horror, the cruelty that afflicts humanity, is a false belief about what we are. We believe ourselves to be our lives, and that's not true. Believing ourselves to be our lives, we are convinced that we are absolutely at stake in the way our lives unfold, and that we have something to say about it by doing something about the things we think and the things we do, the things we want and the things we don't want, and we never succeed. And therein lies the source of all of our misery. If it's true, as Ramana tells us, that the only problem is a false belief about what we are, then it absolutely must be true that the only solution is the truth. Nothing that we do within this that we believe ourselves to be can solve that problem. No way in which we enhance or fix or clarify ideas and thoughts and intentions and so forth can possibly do anything about that problem. Only the truth can solve that problem. No new belief that we might find preferable to the old belief can solve that problem. Like, for example, the belief that I am eternal, infinite, empty, consciousness, love without condition, freedom, and so forth. If we were able to take on that belief and replace the old belief, it wouldn't do us a bit of good because it is still a belief and it's not true. The only solution to the problem of the false belief about what we are is the truth of what we are. Now, this seems really simple. And it's even simpler than I say it, really. It is much simpler. The method whereby we solve the problem by determining the truth is what Ramana calls self-inquiry. Which, as I have said more than once, I really don't like that term, but we're stuck with it. I suspect that it's a bad translation in British-ruled India of Atmavikara, which is the Sanskrit term. But it's okay. It doesn't make any difference what we call it. The method that Ramana offers us is self-inquiry. And self-inquiry has an interesting history to it. The idea of Atmavikara arose a long time ago, arose 2,500 years ago, really, with Shankara and those who were involved in the creation and the writing of the Upanishads, the commentaries on the Vedas. And it arose from a shift that was occurring at that time from the view that in matters of the spirit, we were governed and controlled by gods and spirits and forces and so forth, and we had to do something to placate and appease and make them happy and make them not hurt us or even do us well. A shift from that view to the view that truth, reality, is to be found within. And that shift is still taking place. We have not really shook that off, those old ideas of superstitions and gods and spirits and forces. But in the course of that shift, there arose this idea that there is me, and then there is true self, which is shining and radiant and eternal and gorgeous and freedom and peace and love without condition. And that the problem was that all of the wrongful thoughts and the wrong impulses and the age-old conditioned habits of behavior and thought, all of the wrong desires and so forth, created a kind of fog that occluded, that denied us the ability to see true self. And that what we had to do in order to solve our problems was to clear away that confusion, the fog of confusion and wrongful thoughts and bad conditioned behavior and so forth, so that we could see true self. And that was the state of self-inquiry for 2,500 years. And it is what gave rise to all of the practices that have to do with clearing the mind, with stilling the mind, with making the mind better, less confused, less complicated, with making the mind stop. All of those practices arose from this idea that the problem was that we could not see our true self. And we have to. Ramana turned all that on its head. Ramana points out to us that there is actually not a moment of our lives when we are not totally and completely aware of what I am, of the reality of what I am. That there is no time, no moment of time, not a nanosecond of my life when I am not utterly, absolutely aware of reality. And that although I have fallen into this false idea about what I am, even while following that idea, I still always know the truth. I mean, it's true. You are here. You are here. You are absolutely certain that you are here. There is nothing whatsoever that could be done or said or done to you that will dissuade you from the certainty that you are here. Now, is that not true? Is anybody here? Can anybody here possibly come up with something that will make you doubt that you exist? It is that ever-present certainty of being that is what you are, that is never absent, and that you are always aware of, always. So Ramana tells us, this being the case, the fact is that nothing prevents us from seeing the truth of what we are. And the proof of that is that we always are aware of the truth of what we are. Therefore, none of our fears, none of our hopes, none of our stupidities, none of our understandings, none of our confusion, nothing whatsoever stands in the way of that. In the midst of the most confused and fearful state, you are here and you know it. So that being the case, it's Ramana's insight and Ramana's gift to us to point that out and tell us that nothing whatsoever needs to be done about your mind. Nothing. The mind doesn't need to be stopped. Neurotic impulses don't need to be cured. Vasanas don't need to be cleared. False ideas don't need to be done away with. Fears, desires, lusts, wrong thoughts, none of that needs anything to be done about it. Because doing anything about that has no effect on the real problem, which is a false belief that you are all of that. In fact, anything done within the mind to fix the mind can only strengthen and provide further proof to this false belief. So Ramana tells us, this is all you need to do. Just look at yourself, really. Just right now, in this moment, just for 1 second, stop and look at yourself. Look at the certainty, the absolute certainty that you exist. Look there, just for a second. Now that's not hard. That's really easy. Just consciously look at yourself. And do that repeatedly. Whenever the thought occurs to you, whenever it occurs to you that you don't know what you should be doing next, do that. Don't worry about any of the time that you spend tripping off onto what you need to be and what you need to become and how you're not what you should be and any of that. Don't worry about any of that. Just whenever a moment arises when you're not sure what you should be doing next, do that. Look at yourself. Now, we have been conditioned and habituated to believe that because of the strength of the belief that we are our life, our ever-shifting, changing mind, because of the strength of that belief, inherent in the strength of that belief is the deep-seated conditioning that to believe that realization, reality, the ending of suffering and misery can only happen when the life itself, the mind itself, is cleared. When everything goes away, when all of the stupidity and confusion vanish. And therefore, we also have given our hopes and our dreams and our most serious desire in our life to the idea that realization means that when I say, look at yourself and see, and that's all that needs to be done, that what that means is that in the instant of clearly seeing the reality of what I am, everything goes away. The job is done. Mind is cured. This state of clarity and grace and love and freedom must stay. And of course, when it doesn't, and it never does, we can have all these feelings in satsang, but when they don't stay, and they never do, when the old ideas of what I should be and what I am not and what I want to be and what I want you to be and what needs to happen and what I need to do and what I need to think, and when all of those things come rushing back in, we say, oh, one of two things. Either, well, that doesn't work, which actually would be more mature than our usual reaction to that, which is to say, there's something wrong with me. I'm not doing this right. I knew for all along that this was not to be for me. I knew for all my life that this can happen to everybody else, but not to me. Because we have an idea that realization is something that happens. But if it's something that happens, if it was not here and then it is here, sure to God, it'll not be here again. If realization is something that happens, it ain't worth the effort to get. If realization is something that can be gotten, it ain't worth a second's effort to get it. You are here. That's the reality. You are absolutely certain, absolutely empty of the slightest hint of any doubt that you are. That's reality. That's the truth. That's all there is. All of the rest of it comes and goes within that. And it is that insight that causes the ancient announcement that you are that. Now, it's my experience, and it's my urgent prayer to everyone that I speak to that they will hear what I have to say, hear what Ramana has to say, have a sense of what it is that I am speaking about when I speak about this reality that you are, this here-ness that you are, this certainty of being that you are, and that they will see it to be not spiritual at all, not the doorway into truth at all, but see it much more to be like medicine, like an antibiotic, like, you know, if you get sick and you're got chills and fever and nausea and headache and all of that, you're sick, and you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, okay, I want you to take this 3 times a day for the next 14 days, and take them all, don't stop taking them, just take them 3 times a day for the next 14 days. You say, okay, I'll do that. There's nothing whatsoever that makes any rational sense about the idea that putting some capsule in your mouth and swallowing it is going to have any effect on this feverish chills and sickness and nausea. But you do it anyway because the doctor said for you to do it. There's nothing spiritual about it. I mean, maybe you kind of have an understanding about antibiotics and how they work, but that's just a story. Just like maybe you kind of have an understanding about self-inquiry and how it works, but that's just a story too. It's just medicine. And this is my experience. Here's what I tell you from my heart. If you will, without regard to anything that's happening in your life, anything that's taking place within your mind, if you will, whenever you can, as often as you can, without regret for the times that you can't, but as often as you can, if you will stop for 1 second, just 1 second, longer is even better, but if you'll stop for just 1 second and look at yourself, look at yourself, look at this, what is it that makes me so certain that I exist? Really? What is it? And see that no story about why you are certain you exist can suffice. You will see that if you look into it. You will see that stories about, well, because I'm in the body and I feel the body and I see these things and I hear these things. If you take this very seriously and really look for what it is that make you so certain that you exist, you will quickly dispose of those stories about it as being the heart of it. If you will, whenever you can, as often as you can, stop for a second and look at yourself in that way, looking for the actual experiential reality that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are. If you will do that, it will be like medicine that will, over time, cure this infection that is the false belief about what you are. It will cure it, not in a way that you will even notice it happening for a long time. It will, just as when you take antibiotics to kill the infection in your body, just like that, you don't know what's happening. You don't have a direct understanding or a direct experience of what's happening. But just like that, over time, things will clear up. The sense that you are at stake in this life will dissolve. The sense that there is something that absolutely has to be done about your mind will vanish. It's not that your mind will become enlightened. It's not that your life will become enlightened. But your investment in it will go away. Your belief that it's you will go away. And that belief is the source of all the energy that goes into this movement, which is all you can do, this movement of clinging and resistance, which causes all the trouble. This is the action that is spoken of in all of the teachings as karma, clinging and resistance. This is the action that causes all of the problem, all of the hatred, all of the warfare, all of the internal self-hatred, clinging and resistance. The clinging that comes from the absolute certainty that if I don't hold on to this, I'm through. And if I don't get rid of this, I'm through. The truth is that nothing that happens in this life touches you in the least. And you can see that if you look. You have not changed. You are as you have always been. If you look, you will see that you are exactly the same as you were when you were 13. Exactly the same as you were on the day you were born. Nothing has changed. Nothing has touched you. You look at that which is permanent, that which has never changed, and you know it's here. You know it. It's not something new. You look there whenever you can, whenever it's possible, whenever it occurs to you to wonder, what should I be doing next? Do that. And everything will be all right. That's the promise. That's the absolute promise. You cannot imagine what that means when you're still caught in the grip of the false belief about what you are. And in imagining what that means, you create all of these ideas about enlightenment and realization and infinite, I don't know what. It feels just like you. Really. Now, I have to say, that wasn't too short and that wasn't too simple. You know, the simpler things are, the harder it is to speak of them. Especially when confronted with the mountain of resistance that is the human mind, that is the human conviction, the false belief that I am this life. It's very difficult to sneak around that and get to the heart of things. This teaching that comes from Ramana is radical beyond your possible capacity to comprehend. Within the spiritual arena, whether we think about it as such or not, we see things, spiritual teachings and spiritual matters, as evolving over time. In other words, we can see that, like, for example, if we look at fundamentalist Christianity, we can see that there are things about that we can see where it touches on all Roman Catholicism. You can see the development that leads to from Roman Catholicism to fundamentalist Pentecostal Christianity. You can see that these things evolve. It's the same with Buddhism. If we look at Buddhism, we look at Tibetan Buddhism, we look at Zen Buddhism, we look at what's it called? Pure Land Buddhism. They are all very different in their presentation and in the way they speak about things, even within themselves. But you can see how they touch upon the same principles and the same sensibility, all of them. And you can see how they grow from that to what they are now and what they are becoming. In the same way with your own mind, you can see how the state of your mind when you were 13, for example, you can see that the state of your mind now, although you may be very different in your mind, you can see how it has developed over time, how the things you thought when you were 13 by being proven right or wrong or corrected and adjusted have led to the way you are now. You can see the steady evolution of your mind. And because of that, because that's our experience is that things evolve, because of that, when we hear something like Ramana's teaching, which is truly a radical break, but it has a feeling about it that's spiritual. I mean, here's this guy, he sat in a loincloth on a couch and talked about the Vedas and the pranayama and the Gita and all the things that spiritual people talk about. There is at the core of it an insight that we recognize to be kind of at the core of all of it, which is misidentification. So when we hear it, we want to put it in that world of spiritual teaching and spiritual attainment and spiritual development. We want to see how it fits here and touches the whole spiritual world and realm in this way and that way and the other way. And in so doing, we miss the heart and soul of it. Because Ramana is a break with all of that. Truly. A break with all of it. Ramana represents a break with the whole idea that something has to be done about our minds in order that we can find what's real. Ramana has no truck with any of that. You are here. You are never not here. What happens within what you call your mind does not affect the reality of your being here, nor does it in any way affect the certain awareness of your being here. Isn't that true? Nothing. There's no time. No matter how confused and how wanting and how needy and how filled with bliss or whatever you might be, there's no time when this certainty of being here isn't present, when the awareness of it isn't present. So I advise you to hear Ramana's offering freshly, as if you had never heard it before, as if it had nothing whatsoever to do with anything spiritual at all. Nothing. It's just this. The only problem is a false belief about what you are. The only problem is a false belief about what you are. The solution is the truth. And the truth is easy. Ever present. Never absent. Never not seen. Nothing will happen. Well, something will happen with your life, with your mind, as a result of embarking on this practice. Over time, things will happen, but that's what mind does. Mind changes over time. It is certain that if you embark really upon this practice, upon this method, it is certain that over time, the desperate conviction, and you must see that it's unseen. The belief that you are this life is not seen. That's what makes it a belief. You're not conscious of it. You can't find it anywhere. If you look at yourself whenever you can, as long as you can, if you take that medicine, it is certain that the grip of that false belief will loosen over time, and that the loosening of it will have effect on the way your mind works, will have effect on the way your life unfolds. No one can tell exactly what that effect will be, but I guarantee you, you will be happy. You won't say, "Oh my God, not that." I guarantee that. But mostly, you will see that there's no stake for you in this life. There's no stake for you in the way your mind works, for good or for ill. all of the spiritual teachings, this is the most radical part of it, all of the spiritual teachings at their core have the view that the problem is misidentification. And all of them go from that to the solution being either, and of course what we call, what we are misidentified with is ego. But that's just a story about me. All of them go from the insight that we are caught in a false belief about what we are to the solution being either to cure or to kill ego. All of them. To cure or to kill ego. Ramana sees that ego is irrelevant. Ego is, if anything, your eyes and ears, your smell, your window into the possibility of seeing yourself. So Ramana does not seek to kill or to cure ego, only to eliminate the belief that you are ego. By seeing the truth. Again and again, repeatedly, the truth. What I am, really. So take it like medicine. Don't make anything spiritual about it. Spiritual things may occur in the course of this practice. You may have experiences of great bliss and insights and breaking open and so forth, and you may fall for them and think that that's what you were looking for, but they will go away and be replaced by experiences of loss and grieving and the conviction that you are worthless and never had it and never could have it. But remember that in the experience of bliss and certainty and glory and wonder, as in the experiences of worthlessness and hopelessness and grief and loss and neediness, you always, always know that you are here. And that's what you are, that knowing. Okay, I give up. It's your turn. Yes. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
What's your name?
Susanna.
Susanna, hi.
How are you?
Very
well.
I
have a question for you about choice.
Okay.
Who's choosing?
That's my question. You tell me.
I don't know. That's my thing in life that I get kind of caught up in.
Well, but you really don't get caught up in that. You get caught up in the story about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the question is easy to resolve merely by looking for the one who is making the choice. When there is the sense that you're doing something, choosing something,
mm-hmm.
that sense is very present. And it may be, you may see it as being problematic and therefore go off into a story about, well, who's that and how can that be? But really, when there's the sense of choosing, there is also the sense of the chooser.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find that. And you can look at it directly and see what it is. And then you may tell a story about it. And the story you tell then may be a little closer to the truth than the story you were telling before, but you will also know that it's just a story. My advice is that not to concern yourself so much with this whole business of choice, of free will and not free will and so forth. As long as it feels like you have a choice, choose this. Choose to look at yourself. That's my advice. I mean, it's easy enough to see. It's actually kind of common sense to see that you have nothing to say about the way your life unfolds.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that obvious?
Mm-hmm. At times.
Yeah, well, but really, I mean, you don't even have anything to say about what thoughts come. Is it not true that by the time you notice a thought, it's already here?
True.
And then the next movement may be to claim it and to say, oh, I thought that thought. I thunk that thought. And I don't like that thought, so I'm not going to think that thought again. Mm-hmm. Or, I like that thought. I'm going to think those kind of thoughts again. And then to discover that you really, no matter how much you do not want to think that thought will come. And no matter how much you like that thought will not come. So, the heart of the matter, and this is easy enough to see, and it's given rise to all the theories about karma and prarabdha and predestination and you know, throughout all the history of human beings wondering about what it is to be. Lots of stories. The best thing to do always is to find out who's the thinker. Not as an intellectual exercise, not to find a better story than the one that you have, but to see the thinker directly, to see the doer directly, to see really directly. Follow this idea of being the doer, the chooser, the thinker, the wanter, the not wanter, back to its source. Find it and see what happens. And when that loses its attraction, when that practice of finding what I am as the doer, the thinker, the sufferer, the one who is afflicted, and so forth, when that loses its attraction, stop for a second and see what you are. Because that's always here. The doer is not always here. The thinker is not always here. Mm-hmm. But you're always here. You see? Mm-hmm. And that will make the whole issue of choice, not very interesting. Not solved, just not very interesting. Mm-hmm.
I find myself at this period in my life where I'm kind of stopping and getting much quieter and letting life happen through me. I've always been rather a very busy person, busy mind.
I can see that.
Yeah. So I'm very drawn to this.
Yes, well, that's good. Well, here you are.
Yeah, just this. Yeah. So I'm appreciative.
And this is... And there's, I can't say this strongly enough. You have to do it. You have to take the medicine, even without regard to all of the highfalutin spiritual ideas about doing and not doing. You have to do it. Mm-hmm. You have to take the medicine. You have to stop when you can, and just look at yourself. And that's easy. You see that? I saw you see that sitting there. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome, Susanna. I'm happy to see you. Likewise. Yes.
Am I meant to go to the chair? Is that my...
Yes, you pretty much have to. Have we spoken before?
No. Okay. In fact, I've never heard of you.
Oh. Well, here you are. What's your name?
I'm Jamie.
Jamie, I've never heard of you either.
No doubt. It's a pleasure to be your guest. I suppose I'll indicate just how radically I've misunderstood and how far I am from inhabiting what you've made. I am this suffering self that continually experiences loss and frustration and terrible carnal thirsts and emotional famines and so on, and I kind of do the best to manage that self of mine. And when I consider trying to participate in a tradition which kind of derogates that self or marginalizes it in favor of something universal and clean and empty, it says, what about me? You bastard. Are you leaving me out in the cold?
See, this
Take
is
me with you.
This is really excellent. This is really good. This is what I mean by, the, you know, you need to engage me because it's this is everybody's question. Really, your experience is everybody's experience. Nobody's asking you to marginalize or derogate the self that is famished and lustful and all of that, and wanting to know what about me. That's what I speak of when I'm speaking about the fact that we want to put this in the same world as the rest of the spiritual teachings. It's natural for us to think that that's what's being said here, because there is a long-standing spiritual traditional idea about detachment and dispassion and so forth, which we hear as derogating and rendering irrelevant and so forth, this suffering self. This has nothing to do with that. You can continue as you have, doing the best that you can with all of the practices that you have taken on board to make this suffering, needy, famished, whatever, confused self better than it is. Nobody, there's nothing wrong with that. You can't hurt yourself. You can't do wrong. There's nothing at all about this practice that suggests that you should stop or even slow down anything you're doing now. All that's asked of you is to admit to the possibility that you might have a false idea about what you are. And when you're not doing anything else, look at this reality that's always here. You are here, right?
Why does focusing on the mere fact that I exist connect up with becoming a happier man?
See, that's because, I'll tell you why. Because looking at the fact that you exist, not a story, any story about it, right? This suffering self that you speak of is a story about you. You can see that.
I'm skeptical that that is, well, in fact, is just a story.
It is, but you'll see.
Okay.
But the reason that putting your attention on the reality of this permanence, I'm not speaking of anything that's transitory. I'm speaking of this permanent certainty of being that's always here. The reason that this makes you happier is because it destroys the belief that you are that suffering soul. And that belief is the cause of all the suffering within that soul. Now, that's the claim. But what you're asked to do is nothing that can cause you harm. Like, nobody's asking you to drink the Kool-Aid. Nobody's asking you to go into a hypnotic trance and do something, you know, whatever.
That's what I want.
All this, yes, right. Of course that's what you want. What you're being asked to do is to look directly at what's already here. You're here, right?
For the moment, I will one day perish, though.
Well, we don't worry about one day. You are certain that you're here now.
I can't tell whether that's the most important thing there is.
It doesn't matter whether
you
can tell it's the most important thing. It is the reality of what you are. If the reality of what you are is not the most important thing, well, that's okay, too. Really, nothing that you think, none of the opinions that you have are wrong or need to be corrected. Really. All you have to do is stop whenever you can and look at this.
Isn't this just focusing not so much on the fact that I'm here, but that there is a world at all?
No.
What's the difference?
The difference is that the world comes and goes, and you don't. That's the difference.
I thought I came and went.
Yes, well, that's because that's what you, the one you believe yourself to be, does come and go. I'm telling you, and I don't ask you to believe this. In fact, I ask you not to believe it. But I'm telling you that you are that which doesn't come and go, and that you can see that. You certainly can see this that's permanent. Is it not true that you are here? Is it ever a moment when you are not here? Ever?
Yeah, others experienced it life before I was here. Others will experience
it after I'm
gone.
This is a story. I'm here, right now. Right now, are you here?
That's not legitimate to cut off all the rest of that stuff.
Can you answer my question?
I am on the scene.
Are you? Are you certain of that?
I seem to be around. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Has that certainty changed at all?
Emerson says our moods do not believe.
Forget what
other.
Emerson says. I'm not talking about your moods. I'm talking about the reality of your being. Has that changed at all? Is it any less true for you than it is for me that you are that this that is the bedrock of your being is the same now as it was when you were 13?
It's not the same. Sometimes it's in agony and sometimes it's glad to be here.
Who sees that? Who reports that?
How could it be any different if I were my moods?
Who sees this? Who sees this? Who is the one that's the... I mean, you know, there's this suffering soul, right?
Yeah.
There's someone at the center of that suffering soul. Is there not? Look and see what that is. Look at it directly. Not the stories about it, the suffering soul part, the, you know, all of that, but look at it directly, at the experiential, the phenomenal experiential feeling of me that's at the center of all of that. Look there.
Not sure there's anything there.
Now look and see. Stay there. And if there's nothing there, what's that say?
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is starting to feel like those traditions we dismissed a moment ago where you get rid of the self.
Well, you will find that if you look at this experiential center of the suffering soul, you will find that you can find nothing there. But you will also find that 5 seconds from now, it's back again. That all of the looking there will do nothing to erase it. Still, you look, you find nothing. Oh, there's nothing there. Oh. Imagine that. And then, but what about this and what about that? And pretty soon it's all back again. So that the spiritual traditions that teach us to destroy ego don't work. It's not that there's anything wrong with them. They just don't work. Ego doesn't get destroyed. Even if it is seen to be inexistent, it still is here. So, by looking at the center of the suffering soul and finding no satisfaction there, the possibility arises for you to see that as you were looking at the center of this suffering soul, it was you who was looking. Where is that to be found? Who sees that? And then you're looking at yourself.
So the way to tell what's the real me is whatever is the real me is only an observer. And if it's anything more or other than an observer, then it's ego.
The way to tell what's real you is that it's permanent. That doesn't disappear. Doesn't come and go.
But I was not here for the War of 1812.
How do you know?
Surely I'd remember it if I had been.
You do, don't you? I mean, you know about it. It was Britain and the United States, right? The British burned the capital. You know all that, right?
That seems to me there's a mistake in there somewhere.
Here's what I tell you, really. Whenever you can, look at this permanent reality that we just visited as a result of looking into the center of the suffering soul itself, and then looking for who is looking at that. Whenever it's possible for you to do so, you look at this permanence. And I guarantee you that you have a really subtle and supple intellect, which is not the best thing you could have been graced with in this life. Right. And you can be certain that there will be many stories told about what's going on and what it means and what it doesn't mean, and they will be quite compelling. That's okay. It doesn't really hurt you. It doesn't do anything to you. It doesn't take anything from you. It doesn't give you anything. If you will, just whenever you can, just look at this permanent observer, if you will. Just look there directly. Just for a second. Everything will be cleared up in the end. That's my promise.
Thanks.
Okay. Let me know. I would like to hear from you. You can email me or something. I'd really like to hear from you.
Okay.
Okay. What's your name again?
Jamie,
I'll look for you. There are really, two components to self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi. There are two ways of looking at the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi and two methods that Ramana Maharshi offers. One is the one of looking for this sufferer, this one at the center of the whole story of suffering and getting and not getting, understanding, ununderstanding, and so forth. That's part of self-inquiry also. But to see, and this is why this is an excellent conversation, to see that that is at the heart of the spiritual traditions we have just dismissed, but that ego doesn't get destroyed by that. But that whenever you are looking and you see something profound, like, I'm not sure I am here, someone is looking. And that's the true final inquiry of Ramana, is to find this one who is always here, in whose awareness everything appears and disappears, comes and goes. Just to look there, as often as possible. And if there is if you do suffer from a false belief about what you are, that'll eradicate it. Nothing else will. It won't eradicate that which you falsely believe yourself to be. I mean, why would you want to do that? That's where all the fun is. Yes. I know your name, but you're going to have to say it in the microphone, so...
Jeff.
I've spoken to you before, right?
Yeah. Last time I spoke...
Can I... You need to hold the microphone so it's kind of...
Sure, like this.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Saw you about 4 years ago several times, and then 5 months ago, and what Jamie was saying brought to mind that I don't... For some reason, it doesn't arise for me to do what you're saying, to just do that simple thing. And what the story that I went into was that I'm very invested in, I can't remember the word you used earlier, so I'm gonna try to say that, but part The story of despair, when it's there, is very, very pronounced, very enhanced.
On the side?
Like this.
Like this.
Like this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What do I know?
It's not present now, so now I'm kind of speaking in a story, but it was present for most of the time I was sitting here earlier. And what I notice is when that's there, then what arises is to grapple with mind, is to grapple
sure.
with what's present, is to
sure.
do whatever my nature or my inclination in the moment is to
sure. that's okay.
emote.
That's okay, but it's not here now, right?
Right.
So right now, you can see that you're here, and you can look at that reality. Since the story
yeah,
is not...
I notice I feel dismissive about that for some reason. Like I guess I believe that when I feel peaceful, why would I be inclined to do that? And since I feel like
maybe it's not your time.
I go back and forth between peace, bliss, and despair.
That's why you should feel inclined to do it, because you go back and forth between peace and despair.
And despair.
I tell you that. What I tell you is that it's perfectly all right for you to do whatever practices that you're accustomed to when grappling with despair, to try to do something with it. I mean, that's perfectly okay. It's perfectly okay for you to do whatever practices that you're accustomed to when caught in the grip of peace. Right? I have nothing against any of that. What I am suggesting to you is that since you see that, there is this seesaw that goes on in your life between mm-hmm. peace and despair.
Mm-hmm.
And since you see that, it would, I suppose you would think that it would be better if you weren't caught in that seesaw, if peace prevailed rather than despair. That you look at that which is at peace permanently, which I tell you is what you are. And that by so doing, that peace that is here permanently and without condition will wipe out the idea that you are the one who goes back and forth between peace and despair.
Right.
Doesn't mean that the seesaw will stop. But it's
yeah,
just
yeah,
not
that's
you.
That's me. I hear that.
Yeah. So that's why. And, you know, it's not like taking the blue pill or the red pill. It's just... try it. Don't stop what you're doing. Don't do away with the practices that you've become accustomed to in the grip of despair or in the grip of peace. Just every once in a while, look at this reality of peace that is always here, which is the fact that you're here, that you are, that you exist.
I think the thing that's helped me today to see that is that when you said you're looking for the you, the thing that is perceiving that.
Yes, that's right.
It's aware of that.
That's aware of that, right.
It's outside of the experience.
That's right, it is. It has to be, right? I mean, it can't be the experience. It is that in whose light the experience appears and disappears.
Say that again, please. The experience is like or light? I didn't
light.
Light.
Light. Awareness is light. It is light that gives life to peace and despair. That's you. This is why Papaji always advised always advise us to be aware of awareness. That's the inquiry. I mean, there's many, many different ways that it can be said. That's about how to look for yourself, what it is that you're looking for. Awareness, the certainty of being, the I am. There are many ways, many different things that have come up over the years to say what you're looking for. And I have my way of trying to encourage you to do so. But the simplicity of it, the actual reality and the simplicity of it is here. You can't miss it. That's the point. If you can miss it, then it's all a lie. All the spiritual mumbo jumbo is a lie, including this spiritual mumbo jumbo that I'm spewing. If you can miss it, then it's all a lie. You're here. For the love of God, you're all there is. You are awareness, or you are the I am, or you are this certainty of being, or you are, you're here. You've always been here. You're permanent. You've never changed. You've never been touched. Never. 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 And you know it. And you've always known it. It's not something new. If it's something new, then it's not what you're looking for. Because what's new gets old. That's the nature of new things. They get old. The key is this, I think. The key is to see that what you want above all things in life is to know what you are. And follow that. Look for yourself. Brush aside things as they reveal themselves to be things that come and go. And look for yourself. You're here. You look at yourself. You're here. And do it as often as you can. Just as often as you can. And that does not mean that you have to stop doing despair, or you have to stop doing peace, or you have to stop the subtle, supple, intellectual conversation that goes on. It doesn't mean you have to stop being dissatisfied. It doesn't mean you have to stop any of your practices at all. Just look at yourself. And if you look at yourself often enough, you will lose the belief that you are the one who is doing these practices. That's all. Practices are okay. Despair is okay. Peace is okay. Understanding's okay. Satisfaction's okay. Dissatisfaction's okay. Just doesn't touch you. Doesn't give you anything. Doesn't take anything from you. And the only way you can know that is by finding what is this you that I am referring to and looking at it.
The place where I still get hung up. I appreciate everything you just said. That was very helpful. I think I'm supposed to want to know what you just spoke of. And I notice there's a large part of me, or mind, or whatever you want to say, that doesn't really want to know, doesn't care.
I tell you what you want above all things is to know what you are. And I tell you, I tell you that the whole story of your life is in service to that desire to know what you are. It is everything, all the despair, all the peace, all the dissatisfaction, the disinterest, is an ever-evolving, ever-shifting and changing attempt to say what you are. All of it. It's all driven in service to this underlying desire to know what you are. And it is just looking in the wrong place. It is just the practices that it is taking don't serve the desire, really. It's why we never get finished with it. But you're here. For the love of God, you're here. Always. What's so hard about that?
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
I was wondering if, so you're giving us the advice to, whenever we can, taste what we are, takes permanence.
Exactly.
And also at the same time saying that all the things we do, the activities we engage in, are not problematic. But I guess my question is, sometimes there's kind of an either-or quality to that, to either tasting what I am, to being presence or permanence, and then, because kind of you say, stop, as often as you can, take the medicine. It's almost like this separate action. And so I guess my question is it mutually exclusive? Is there, because it, also it seems to me that...
No, it's not.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, really, consider this. There's never a time when you are not absolutely aware that you are here. You may be paying attention to some other story that's being told, right? But there's never a time that that awareness isn't present. So you can, in the even like when there's great fear present, like the, you know, anxiety and fear, and even when that's present, you can see, just for a second, you can see that you're here. And you can taste that. The fear doesn't have to stop.
Just for a second, can it be, I guess my experience is that there can be kind of like this, maybe kind of shifting perception of, like the fear kind of maybe receding into the background or something, as when I'm seeing what I am in a more permanent sense. And then maybe like a closer identification with the fear. And so, yeah, I guess, and it's technically I'm here, but it's I'm here as fear. Does that make sense?
Yes, but even when the center of your understanding is that you are here as fear, still you are absolutely certain that you are present. Whether as fear or not fear. This becomes very difficult to speak about, because what I'm speaking about is the fact that there is never a moment, never, when you are not aware of the reality of you. And so that it's not that the knowing is something new that has to be found, because the knowing is what you are.
Yes, and yet there still is this taking of the medicine, or this kind of practice of coming back to a conscious knowing of that.
Yes, that's right. The problem with that is, I mean, what you're making yourself conscious of is knowing, is the fact that you are the knowing of the reality of what you are. And the problem with that is, I mean, I'm not saying, in other words, listen to what...
I don't know if I'm saying there's a problem. I guess I had some confusion over whether it didn't seem to be mutually exclusive.
Consider this for a second, Greg. Everything is mutually exclusive in the mind. It's not possible for you to hold two thoughts at the same time. It really isn't. So that every event in the mind is exclusive of every event, other event in the mind. It's just the nature of mind. So yes, I am asking you that when it occurs to you to do so, that you choose to move your attention to this reality, this background permanence, for as long as you can. And the reason for doing that...
In the midst of whatever's happening.
Yes, right. In the midst, or, you know, or if you don't want to interrupt the practice that you're involved in right then, like, I don't know, fear or despair or peace or whatever, then wait until it goes away and then do it then. But better to do it whenever you can. The more you do it, the quicker it works.
Okay. I guess sometimes that kind of comes into awareness. It's kind of the idea to take the medicine, as you say, or kind of the permanence revealing itself more clearly. And then, yeah, I guess the question to me is whether there is kind of a stopping at that moment. And it's like, okay, so I can just continue and am aware of that presence in the midst. Or maybe would it be more beneficial to me to... And then sometimes I'll just kind of put my book down, or I'll stop doing what I'm doing and just sit and rest in that without...
That's very useful. That's really useful. And
to do the latter?
Yeah, to do all of it, but the latter in particular. Hmm. It's very useful to take time that where you want to... I'm very careful to speak about the fact that you don't have to stop what you're doing, because everybody seems to think that you have to stop what you're doing, and I tell you that's not true. But if you can, by all means, stop what you're doing and give preeminence to what's real. Yeah, there's no problem with that.
Okay. Because actually, yeah, it's almost like that's so full in a way that, yeah, it can just be very satisfying to just kind of stop what I'm doing.
Yes, and it's, I'll tell you, it's my experience that the more you do it, the more you want to do it. That in a way that cannot be explained, really, can't be, you know, like rationally justified. That this seeing of the reality is like the water you've wanted all your life. And there's no way to explain that, because it isn't like the water you've wanted all your life. But the more you do it, the more you want to do it. It's like what you've wanted, really, and not known. So that's a confirming sign. It's not a bad thing. By all means, really, when you can, just put everything aside. You know, I had it easier than most people because I was in prison when I found Ramana Maharshi. And what that means is that I had much more time. There were much less demands on my time during the time of learning this practice, of learning how to do self-inquiry. And I spent hours sitting, resting in this, rebounding out of it, and then coming back to it. But also, I spent all of the time that I could when I was walking around, when I was taking a shower, when I was eating lunch, when I was walking the track, when I was cleaning the toilets in the staff lounge, which is what my job was, I would always try to move my attention into the center of things, into the subject. Try to move my attention to try to catch a glimpse of this reality, this awareness, all the time. My advice really is that you do it all the time. But I know that if you do it a little of the time, you will come to want to do it all the time. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Is that helpful?
Very helpful.
You guys give me everything, really. There is no... There is no such thing as an individual realization. Really, there isn't. There's no such thing as a human being who is enlightened. That's all made up. God knows why. It's all a lie. There is one human mind. Only one. Less than one. And you guys give me everything. It is my great joy and my great honor, and I am so grateful to all of you for being in satsang with me. I am your servant. Thank you for this time together. Thank you for satsang. Om Shanti.